Ready?
Got open man. DJ Moore. End zone. Touchdown. Touchdown Bears.
I am Jeff Joniak.
Blitz is on. Down he goes. Husker.
What was it like playing for Coach Ditka?
I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Pressure coming. He's in big trouble. Down he goes. No. Montez Sweat.
No way.
Now, Bears Etc. brought to you by Miller Lite with the voices of the Bears, Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer.
Welcome back, Chicago Bears, to Hallis Hall in Lake Forest. The offseason program officially underway as of Monday, the 15th, tax day. Tom, I know we love that day. We just love a great time to reflect on how you've spent your money over the last year.
I try to save as much as I can, Jeff.
Yes, you do. You're about as creative of a financial planners would love you.
No, they wouldn't.
Oh, Tom, you are spendthrift.
Right, I am. I am spendthrift for sure, but that's a story for a different
Yes,
life.
It is. Anyway, it's good to be back and ready to roll in under 10 days before draft day, so it's exciting indeed. The Bears right now picking 1-9 and charting a new course for the future. And the doors did open up at Hallis Hall for the offseason program. I think 20-plus teams underway. So that involves, getting in the gym, Tom, getting in the weight room. That's a big part of it.
Well, it better not just start right now. That's a process that has to start maybe 2 weeks after the season is over. And then it's you kind of ramp it up, and then you get into that strength-gaining period that the Bears should be in now. But it's something that they should have been a part of their own trainers at home. But they have one of the top facilities in all the NFL and some really creative minds up there to get themselves ready for the upcoming season.
And, the draft is always an interesting time for guys. This is a young football team. There are some veterans on it, obviously, but roster positions are open for business. And, I know you always, at least you always told me you sweated out draft weekend a little bit, right? Because if they draft your position, it's a full flop sweat, right?
It is. You got to figure, okay, what type of season did I have and how did my season end? And in my exit interview with my position coach and the head coach, what type of feeling did they give you as you left the building? And then if you sit there and they said, okay, with the third pick in in the third round, offensive guard, so-and-so, all of a sudden you are on notice that you did have an exit interview, but they're understanding that this player was too talented to pass up. So the competition increases at an alarming rate the night of the draft.
All right, you played your whole career with the Bears except for 1 year with the Dolphins, but there was no exit interview with the Dolphins, correct? You were going to retire. But if you did have one, give me a Mike Ditka exit interview and a Don Shula exit interview.
Well, a Mike Ditka interview is more of an ex-player and where do you think you are going forward? And the coaches always used to say, look, if your arrow is pointed up, we're going to continue to coach you like you're a member of this team. If your arrow is ever pointed down, we're going to look to replace you. So, what type of season do you feel you have? Were you healthy throughout the season? Do you feel that you complemented the offensive line throughout the whole year? And how does your body feel at the end of the year? And then Don Shula, when he told me after the last game I played for him, and I told him, I said, Coach Shula, I'm thinking about retiring. He said, Tom, one thing I want to tell you is I never listen to a veteran the first couple days after the season's over. As we approach minicamp, give us a call and let us know how you're feeling, and we'll have, we'll determine, we'll make a determination at that point. So, Mike Ditka never, the seriousness never left his face or what he expected out of you. I think Don Shula had a different type of feeling about you in terms of how you could help the football team and where you were at in your career.
So did he give you hey, Tom, we need you to do X, Y, and Z. We want you coming in at this particular weight. We're disappointed in your physicality in this particular situation. I mean, did it get that detailed? Because I do believe it gets that detailed nowadays.
Mike Ditka never knew that I'd ever had to be encouraged to be in the weight room. He always knew that I was always going to show up in shape. He knew that we are kind of a committed group of offensive linemen, that we are there for the everyday work process and with the help of Dick Stanfeld. But, you know, as you did get older, and if he felt that your performance was sliding, he would let you know, and he would tell, look, we expect better out of you next year. So, you know, come ready, but come to compete. You know, we're not going to sit here and guarantee you a job as you walk out the exit room.
This episode of Bears Etc. is brought to you by Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. So the Bears are going to get better in a couple of weeks. The draft is exciting. Picks 1 and 9, barring any trades. 2 impact plug-and-play starters. What will that mean for this roster that's been reshaped and built by general manager Ryan Poles and his staff and coached by Matt Eberflus, in your opinion?
Okay, let's feel they're going to take Caleb Williams number one. Let's just assume that. They bring in Shane Waldron, a new offensive coordinator. These two have to attach a relationship immediately. And then how much does the quarterback position affect the rest of the offensive positions and then the overall performance of the football team? And I think it's super exciting from what we've seen over the past of what a new quarterback can bring to an organization for that first year, i.e. C.J. Stroud, or many years down the road, i.e. Patrick Mahomes. So I think it's an exciting position anytime a new quarterback comes aboard this high in the draft. And then, you know, I don't know what to think about number 9 because Ryan Poles is a super interesting GM that's been able to, you know, add more picks throughout the draft, and that's what we've become accustomed to. So I would target that player at 9 that if he was there, I would take him and I would never look back. If I had a targeted player at number 9 in a couple different positions and they weren't there, then I would think about moving back and adding more picks. So I think it's super exciting. It's something that we've been talking about since the day the season ended, because you knew the Bears were going to have the number 1 pick in the draft because of what the Carolina Panthers and how they finished. But I think whenever you talk about number 1 and number 9, wow. I mean, you can add so much to a team. But, you know, Jeff, it seems to me that over the last 10 years in the draft, no matter what round you pick in, you can add a contributor to the roster sometimes immediately, like a guy like Braxton Jones, or a player that can develop into a special player within a season or two.
Look what the LA Rams did last year with their defensive tackle, Kobe Turner, and obviously Puka Nacua was, and they became a playoff team with a veteran quarterback, you know, in Matthew Stafford on the schedule for the Bears, as a matter of fact, this year in 2024. You know, there's clouds of players when you draft as a general manager. You know, there's going to be a window of players. So if it is tackle, or if it is edge, or if it is wide receiver, there's going to be a cloud of players, and you'll be comfortable with any of those players at various spots. So yes, I envision a potential for trading down if that player that you can live with and you still think is graded the same way as two other players is still there, you can get more draft picks. So, I was almost singularly focused leading up into the really deep dive of what's going on right now and just getting ready for our show, our draft show on ESPN 1000 on draft night and just the whole draft weekend. And that leads us into the rest of the season, actually, with all this information. Is that, you know, if somebody wants to come up and get 9 and you can get down into an area where you know you're going to get a really good day one starter, even if it's in the mid-teens or early 20s, and you're going to be able to add maybe 3 more draft picks and maybe one next year, I'd be interested in that. I don't want to, like everybody's saying, and we're going to be talking to Bucky Brooks here in just a moment, from NFL Network, their fine analyst and draft expert, former scout in the NFL and a former kick returner as well. We're going to talk about some of that. But there's so many ways you can go in building this roster even better than with just the 1 and the 9 that, you know, I'd be open to that. And I think you have to be as a general manager.
I would too, but I would have an edge, a tackle, and a receiver that I would have, if they're there, I'll take them and I'm not looking back. If I had one of those three designated to one of those three players and they weren't there, then I would do everything in my power to move back and get more picks. Also, Jeff, so when Roger Goodell opens the draft and says, okay, with the first pick in the draft, the Bears are on the clock. I'm not going to run to the podium immediately. I'm going to let that time tick away to see if someone is still going to give me that interest call at number nine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm going to add more time to that ninth pick conversation. And so if everybody's going, oh my God, are they thinking outside the Caleb Williams pick? No, but I'm offering more time for the number nine pick.
Game day snacking calls for Good Foods Chunky Guacamole made with Hass avocados, tomatoes, onion, cilantro, and a squeeze of lime juice. Score some today at your local grocery store because game day is guac day. All right, let's just look at the receiver position for a moment because there's a chance that could be, along with offensive linemen. Okay, Peter Schrager from NFL Network did a mock draft, his first one, but he added this nugget that he's just not throwing stuff up against the wall. It is lying season in the NFL, of course. Nobody's going to show all their cards, but he insists, and I have a lot of respect for Peter Schrager, former writer, and has done a great job with Good Morning Football on NFL Network, but he worked the phones. He's trying to make this an intelligent mock draft. So he had 9 offensive linemen in the first round, 8 wide receivers, and a tight end, 5 quarterbacks with Nix, the 5th, Penix, not in the first round, and 9 defensive players. So the most ever has been 19 offensive players in a first round. If this were the case, it would be the first time in history that it'd be that number of offensive players. So with the heavy emphasis on the offensive line receiver, I want to talk about receiver for this podcast. You have what you have on the team right now in DJ Moore. You have Keenan Allen, 2 all-pro caliber players. They do different things. They will complement each other. You've got Tyler Scott. And as of right now, that would be your big 3. Valus Jones is still there. He figures to be the kick returner with competition. So are you looking for what? To complement what you believe Caleb Williams will bring to the table, what Shane Waldron will call as an offensive coordinator and the scheme the Bears are going to run. So you want a guy who separates? Do you want a guy who's going to be a 50-50 contested guy? Do you want to run after the catch guy? I mean, I know you want all that in one, but what don't they have, what they currently do have, that interests you in the type of receiver? Not the name, but the type of receiver you're looking for.
You know, the biggest concern when the Bears had Willie Gault was it would always make the safeties line up deeper than anybody else that didn't have that world-class track speed. And to me, if you know, like Worthy, the kid that ran the fast 40, you know, if you go back and you look at his durability and how many games he played and started, I would have interest in a player that has that type of blazing ability because you're almost guaranteeing yourself you're going to have one-on-one coverage, or else you're going to have the safeties that are lining up so far off the line of scrimmage because of that blazing speed concern. You're going to open up the underneath for DJ Moore, for Keenan Allen, for Cole Kmet, for Gerald Everett, for Swift, and you know all the other guys that have the opportunity to touch the football. And so do I want a 6-foot receiver to match up with DJ Moore? Not necessarily. Do I want a guy that is a 6'1", 6'2 guy like Keenan Allen? Not necessarily. But is there a guy there that has that blazing speed that every defensive coordinator has their safeties already lined up off the line of scrimmage in a backpedal position? Because if he does have that double move or else he has that streak route and you don't jump him, it's going to be 6.
All right, well, here's how I'm looking. Okay, so most passes in the NFL these days are 10 yards or less, correct?
Yes.
Slot receiver that is just a dynamic route runner coming right into the league. A guy not unlike what Puka Nacua did last year or what guys like Edelman over the years or Amendola or those type of guys that you know they are gonna have a symbiotic relationship with their quarterback right out of the gate because they're going to get completions. They're going to move the sticks, and the big plays go for the outside guys. Now, not saying DJ and Keenan can't do that as inside guys either, but a guy that is in that kind of where he's going to get yards after the catch, he's going to be a physical player, He's going to be a guy, and that's somebody that would be different. What do you think of that?
Yes, but where? Jeff, look, those three guys that you just mentioned, where were they drafted? These you're talking
about a slot receiver. Yeah.
That is is that you know, third, fourth,
yeah, fifth,
you know, ability. So you don't have to go out and, you know, get a Danny Amendola in the first round.
Right. Or, and I'm not I don't care what round. Yeah.
But if you're I was assuming that we were talking about number nine.
No, I'm just talking about what kind of receiver would add to the mix.
You know, what is his name? Xavier Leggett.
Yeah.
Is that another receiver who is a profitable receiver. He's really good. He's got good size. He's got good speed. He's had a great career. And so you have to define exactly what you're looking for out of that receiver position. And again, I was with the assumption that we are talking about number nine. And if you were going to add a receiver, what was going to complement this group the most? And to me, it's always that guy that, you know, a few years ago, the fastest 40 in the history of the combine is John Ross.
Yeah.
This is his last name.
Yeah.
And he had no catches his rookie year. He really didn't have a very good NFL career. But if you look at Worthy and you look at the amount of games played, the type of program he was playing in, he's the type of guy that if you're looking for a blazing speed that has catches attached to it, he's that type of guy.
There's so many. It's a matter of what flavor of ice cream you like.
Right.
I mean, there's so many guys that are intriguing here because of the impact now of spread offenses in high school to the college game, the 7-on-7s. I mean, there are so many. No question about it. We're brought to you by PNC, official bank of the Bears. Let's jump into our conversation with NFL Network analyst Bucky Brooks. Pleased to be joined by one of the veteran analysts out there on the NFL landscape from NFL Network, Bucky Brooks. And a reminder that NFL Network providing live coverage of the 2024 NFL Draft in Detroit, April 25th through the 27th. He is a busy man and kind enough to carve out 15 minutes with us. How you feeling, Bucky? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. You've been doing this a while now, so I'm going to start out before we get a bit into your background. What have you learned about the 2024 draft class? Because each year, as Tom and I dig in as well and get ready for our Bears draft, we also look at the bigger landscape of the league, and everyone seems to be its own animal. How are you looking at 2024?
Well, 2024 is a bit of the COVID class. And so what you have is you still have some older guys who were granted an extra year from COVID. You have some younger guys who are coming out. So you kind of have a mix of players. When you talk to people around the league, they will tell you that it's a good draft at the top, but it kind of falls off a little bit once you get into the fourth round, just because of the depth and the talent. And so what you may see a lot of people get out of those picks at the end of the draft because they'll feel like there'll be better picks coming down the road in 2025 and beyond.
You know, Bucky, from the time you start evaluating the draft getting closer to this year, and then you see a couple players that jump up at the board. You know, one guy like Mitchell, the defensive back, after Jeff did the Senior Bowl, this guy is one of the more talked about risers on the board. Is there anybody else that stands out in your mind that has become that attractive, you know, pre-draft guy?
I would say, like, Quinyon Mitchell definitely has kind of got the buzz. I think people are coming around on Cooper DeJean from Iowa a little bit more. I think there's a greater appreciation for his game. Particularly after he had a great pro day the other day, we ran 4.4. You throw in his time, his athleticism, with what he was able to show at Iowa, which is a really good program when it comes to producing by everybody on defense, but particularly defensive backs. I think the buzz is he's kind of caught fire of late, where he possibly could be a top 15, top 20 pick. And I would say the other guy, medical is always an issue, but Peyton Wilson from NC State, inside linebacker, who prior to the combine wasn't really in discussion as a first-round pick, but after he runs a 4.45 and does all the things that he's been able to do, people are now considering him as a first-rounder. And I think that's something that many of us didn't expect given his medical situation.
Yeah, Tom's been on him. You've been on Peyton Wilson.
Right. I'm just a little worried about that because he's so fast, and I think about the impacts and the collisions he has with the injuries he's had. How about this for a question, Bucky? So you look at what Brock Purdy has been able to do, and I don't like the term Mr. Irrelevant. To me, he's just another draft choice. And then you look at the ascension of J.J. McCarthy. You know, there's more similarities between those two guys in body style and 4 years in a college program, good coaching, and then you see what Brock Purdy has been able to do. Do you think that helps J.J. McCarthy be more highly thought of, or is he his own? Is he his own person?
I would say the Brock Purdy example is a good one, but I would say the guys that benefit most from the Brock Purdy discussion will be Jaden Daniels, who finished his career with 55 starts, Bo Nix, who has 61 starts, and Michael Penix, who is well over 40. And the thing that we are seeing, the guys who start a ton of games at a collegiate level are better prepared to have success at the NFL level when it comes to playing quarterback. That's just, look, there used to be an old thing that Bill Parcells used to have, the Parcells rule. The game is different, but he used to want guys that were 2.5, 3-year starters. He wanted them to have 30 starts at least. He wanted them to have 23 wins. He wanted to be college graduates because there was a level of maturity or whatever. Now, the game has changed where you can't use that hard and fast rule like he was using it. But if you kind of adapt it and you make it where it's about more experience, more game reps, more maturity, you tend to find guys who can play. Because Aiden O'Connell was an older guy last year who had a bunch of starts, and it worked out for him. But, yeah, Brock Purdy is an example that many front offices are using, trying to figure out how they can find the right quarterback for them.
Bucky Brooks, our guest here on the Bears Etc. podcast. Bucky, it drives me nuts. I cannot stand the reference, and we all make it. We all make it as analysts here. Ourselves as play-by-play team, we do it. We don't like to lose grip on the past. We believe football is football, right? And we say you can't do things nowadays. The quarterback position being the most important in sports. There should be a ramp-up period. There should be the experience level. And to throw these guys out there like many are going to do in this draft and have done in many, it really is a disservice to them. And then you throw in the coaching, and if they have an offensive coordinator who makes them sink in year one, they're getting head coaching jobs, and I got to learn something all new again. It's this cycle of the quarterback position. Teams are falling all over themselves, Bucky, trying to spend the money to find the right guy, and it's not often successful.
No, it's not often successful because it's the hardest position to build around. I would say, like, you guys as Bears fans and followers and supporters will hate this, but having spent 3 years in Green Bay, like, having watched how the organization would develop quarterbacks in the mid-90s. So Brett Favre was in the middle of his three MVP run. Mike Holmgren and Ron Wolf were big believers in always bring a quarterback in every 2 years. They were big proponents of you can never have enough. That 96 team that won a Super Bowl, Jim McMahon was on that team. Doug Peterson was on that team. And the backup quarterback, Todd Detmer, was there the year before. So it was always about developing the quarterback and having multiple guys in. What has gone away is before it used to be you would sit, and you would sit behind a veteran. You would learn how to play. And no matter how high it came in, you weren't getting onto the field for like a year or two. We saw that happen with Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer sat behind John Kitna. He was the number one overall pick. We saw Phillip Rivers sit for 2 years behind Drew Brees. He was a fourth overall pick. But those guys were Pro Bowl players by their third year. So there is something to taking a slow, methodical approach to the quarterback position. The issue that you have, the fan base doesn't typically go right for it. And a lot of times that noise kind of filters into the building, and ownership is like, hey, the fans are clamoring for the guy. We got to get him on the field. And that kind of changes the timeline for everything.
All right. That brings us to Caleb Williams, USC, getting to know him as you have from watching tape, analyzing and watching. What have you learned about him that will translate well, assuming the Bears do go with him at the number one overall pick?
Yeah, he's the presumptive number one. I would say that know him a few different ways, right? Know him from who he has been at USC and Oklahoma before that. Super talented player. The talent jumps off the tape. I won't go so far as to say that he's a generational talent, but what I will say is he's a spectacular playmaker who has a flair for the dramatic. Does a really good job of raising his game in big games, and so he handles the pressure of kind of being the guy. to go from Oklahoma, where he dazzled and knocked Spencer Rattler out of his position, and Spencer Rattler was being talked about as a Heisman Trophy candidate, to him making the way to SC, following Lincoln Riley, and handling all the things that comes along with being the star quarterback at SC, you give him credit for that. But when you talk to his teammates, they swear by him. They say he's a great teammate, really good leader, loves the moment, and those things. I was friends of a high school defensive coordinator who went against him in high school when he was at Gonzaga Prep back in the DMV. And he's like, look, man, this dude has been the same way since he was in high school. So when people talk about like the dad or family or any of that stuff, he's handled everything with class. He's been terrific when it comes to being able to block out the noise. And so that gives me hope that he's going to be able to handle all the expectations and pressure being the number one quarterback in Chicago, because he's stepping into a situation that's different than the one that Justin Fields stepped into. Right now, I think if you poll people in the city, the expectation, we're going to drop Caleb Williams in, and we're going to go to the playoffs and beyond. That's a lot for a young quarterback to do in his first season, but that's going to be the expectation when he steps onto the field.
You know, Bucky, I like your top five dark horses. And Joe Milton is always – I've always been intrigued by this guy because he's an incredible-looking athlete. So if you had an experience of a quarterback like this, to go behind Josh Allen, to go with Jim Harbaugh, or get into a program like the Chicago Bears – where they have two guys that start off, but they have limited expectations for a while of a guy like Joe Milton, but you could possibly develop quarterback collateral. What do you think about a guy like that?
I don't think it's ever a bad thing to double down and invest in the quarterback position. So if you're proposing like, hey, they take Caleb Williams number one overall, but then Joe Milton's there maybe in the fifth, sixth, or seventh round, yeah, you take a flyer on him. And what you're doing is, you're basically doubling up, kind of like the Washington football team did years ago when they took RG3 and had Kirk Cousins. And if you're in the business of developing quarterback, it is the biggest and most valuable trade commodity that you can have if it works. Joe Milton is intriguing because of the size, because of the arm talent. Look, he played at Michigan under Harbaugh, didn't get on the field much, but he has that in his bag. And then he had success playing when he had an opportunity at Tennessee. It's not perfect. It's not always pretty. But just in terms of the raw material that he brings, he's certainly worth kicking the tires on and seeing if you can develop him.
When I was getting ready to do the Senior Bowl for SiriusXM, a guy walked out on the field with no uniform. And I'm like, I'm not quite sure who that is, but man, that's a man right there. And then he started flinging the ball 80 yards, just warming up. So just crazy. All right, final moments. So the number 9 pick is also, like, in a normal year, we're all excited about top 10 pick, right? We got the number 1 overall. Mm-hmm. We got number 9. Assuming they stay there, what the popular discussion has been, Bucky, here is, okay, what are the needs for the Bears right now? Well, edge is one of them, certainly. Another edge to pair with Montez Sweat. The discussion at wide receiver, certainly because of the talent in that top 10, presumably, and then also offensive line because you can never have enough. What fits for you based on what you've learned in two prior drafts from Ryan Poles and what he's done after stripping it to the bare wood and building this thing up to now set the stage with a franchise quarterback coming in as well?
Yeah, so there's so many different philosophies that Ryan Poles could take and subscribe to in terms of building this team up. Some would say, like, build strength on strength, which is the quickest way that you can make one side of the ball great. So you talk about the investment that they have on the offense. Keenan Allen teaming up with DJ Moore. You have Cole Kmet. You have Gerald Everett coming in. You went got DeAndre Swift. If you just think about, man, if we had a guy like a Roma Dunze and we put him in, we got three legitimate wide receivers that can play, three big wide receivers that can, I would say, handle the elements in terms of being able to catch the ball and deal with the cold weather in the Windy City in Chicago in December. To me, that would make a lot of sense. I would also like for them, like Matt Eberflus did a really good job when he took over as D coordinator. Montez Sweat was better than many anticipated when he got traded for. They need a complimentary rusher. But it comes down to weighing how do you grade the receiver that is there versus the pass rusher there. I would say if it's one of the big three, those guys probably get the nod with a significant margin over the top pass rusher that could be there, which would be Dallas Turner or Laiatu Latu or Jared Verse.
Well, Bucky, you know, I'd like to get more into talking about a guy like Austin Booker that you highlighted. However, I'd like to get your feelings about Devin Hester, because when I look at your background, you have a similar position resume of Devin, and now you think of him going into the Hall of Fame. What are your thoughts on a guy like Devin going into the Hall of Fame and what he's been able to accomplish?
One is great, and I worried about him getting in because I was like, man, he might be the last of the great kick returners that we talk about having gold jacket consideration. I will say that I remember I just started scouting when Devin Hester was coming out, and the big conversation is what position will he play? Like, what would be the position that he plays outside of being a returner? Will he be a wide receiver? Will he be a DB? And those things. And I think what Devin Hester will go down as, he was the ultimate, I would say, momentum changer. His kick and punt returns, they were, I mean, like, they were must-see TV. And the amount of times that he was able to flip the field and change the tenor and the tempo of the game with a big return, I think they appreciate that. Part of why I think you saw the change in the kickoff rules, the kickoff return rules this year, is they want some of that energy and that electricity back. That play was significant for so long, and it become kind of a ceremonious, you know, like play. But now it's back. And so I think Devin Hester has a lot to do with how we, team builders, people in the media at our age range, how we view the position, because he was nothing short of spectacular with the ball in his hands as a kick return.
Oh, yeah. He was ridiculous, Bucky. Ridiculous. And, you know, shortly after that new rule change, and Tom and I were pounding, man, we were all season long, we were just getting annoyed at the you know, the touchbacks, the indifference in returning. Mm-hmm. And now special teams is back. It's back and hopefully better than ever in 2024. Bucky, appreciate it so much. Thank you. You do a great job. Also, we love you with our buddy Daniel Jeremiah as you guys break down college talent all season long and certainly on the podcast Move the Sticks with the NFL season. So keep up the great work. Appreciate you, Bucky.
Thank you, Bucky.
Thanks, Emil. Appreciate
you. Awesome.
So, hey, Bucky does a heck of a job. All those guys at NFL Network, Charles Davis, Daniel Jeremiah, and they really break things down in a really understandable way. Everybody's got different opinions. What I've been doing with all these position profiles, I've been putting like the Kuiper grade, you know, what position number do they have them at overall? So I have like seven different guys just to get an idea of, and you know, guys aren't too far off the beaten track from one another, certainly with the first round. But as you move into the deeper part of it, it definitely changes. But just some really good stuff there from Bucky Brooks. But here's what I love, because you're a thinking man, Tom. You're a thinking. You're always thinking. You got a lot of time to think. You threw in Joe Milton.
Yes.
When I mentioned in that interview, as you just heard, that I saw him walking out of the practice field. You know, I didn't know if he was a defensive player or if he was a tight end. I didn't know. And it was Joe Milton. And that's a football player. That's a football player. And I've seen where teams will likely going to give him maybe a chance to play tight end. But I love that your thought process was, hey, if you got a heck of a coaching staff and you got guys that you believe are teachers, you can make this guy possibly into something. What a project that would be based on his overall traits and talent and arm strength. Now, that's not all that you need, obviously. Remember, Rohan Davey could throw the ball 80 yards too from LSU and did not amount to much of a quarterback in the National Football League. The one thing, though, I went back and looked at what his completion percentages throughout his life have been. In high school, not once did he hit 50% completion percentage. So that inaccuracy is really a challenge for him.
Right. Well, the only reason that I was, you know, I've seen Joe Milton play. I've seen his arm strength. I've seen, you know, his body size and shape. And if he did come aboard the Bears, either in a free agent or a late round draft choice, he's not going to interfere with the development of Caleb Williams. And so if you brought in a young guy like that, and then you took this talent, and you started to develop him in a quarterback capacity, you're gaining value with him. Yeah. And now, you know, and it's not urgency to get him ready to play by week three. No, it may be getting him ready to play quarterback in year three. But it is, you know, you've had an eyewitness account, and it's hard to deny that when this guy comes out of the locker room, he spent time in the weight room. He's an incredible athlete. You know, he's really strong. He played in a big time SEC program. So, you know, it's just kind of thinking outside the collateral box.
The moment he gets in the league, he's got the strongest arm in football.
Yeah.
That's not it.
No doubt.
I don't think it's debatable. I mean, that's how crazy that is. Hey, when it's time to tackle some game day deals, then go with the grocer who's been a part of the Chicago area since 1899. Jewel Osco, the official grocery store of the Chicago Bears. All right, Larry Mayer doing a great job with Hall of Fame previews of Devin Hester and Steve McMichael. Julius Peppers coming up in August. But you had the occasion to be an ALS fundraiser over the weekend. Our good friend Dan Pompey called me this morning, as a matter of fact, said he has a new partner, and I wasn't right. Picking up what he was laying down, and here it's Tom Thayer, and you had some really nice things to say about Steve as he continues. Man, I hope the good Lord gets him to Canton in me one too. Piece and enjoy that moment. That's that's all you can ask for at this point.
You know, it's a super supportive crowd to the ALS community of 400 people strong, doctors and people that are afflicted with it and just the supporters. So I think a lot of people that sat in that room really don't know Steve McMichael. So I gave them the perception of Steve McMichael and the reality of Steve McMichael. Because at one time, when Ming and I were talking, and he says, "Hey, Tommy, I want to tell you something. You ever get the chance to talk to people about Mongo, I want you to tell them the truth. I want you to tell them what kind of guy I was, what kind of teammate I was, and how tough I am." And that is all Steve. But the perception of Steve is he's one of the most intelligent, congenial, supportive teammates that you could possibly imagine. He was a mentor of mine. He helped me be a better offensive lineman because he was such a great defensive lineman. He was super supportive in the weight room and around the locker room. So when you talk about the Mongo, the Ming the Merciless, you know, all the, you know,
all these characters,
nicknames of Steve McMichael, he was, but he was also one of the greatest men in the history of the Bears.
Well, you know, and the greatest name attachment to him that you could possibly have for you is friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, he's a great, you know, friend.
But I had so much respect for Ming because he is older than me, and he mentored me to be a better offensive lineman through his skills as a defensive lineman. There's times at practice I would get out there early and said, "Hey, Tommy, come here. I've been noticing this about you in your stance, and I want you to try this." And, you know, he would give you those hints and clues, and just he's an incredible teammate.
That's part of why you're a Hall of Famer. It's called intangibles. Yeah. You know, when you look at Hall of Famers, it's not just skill. It's not just their athleticism. It's not their traits. It's the intangibles that get them there. It is. It's this overwhelming desire to be great, this overwhelming desire to be a good teammate, the insatiable appetite to win and to, kind of live almost on the edge of fear, you know, on that straddling that fence of living with fear of failure.
That's right. Life, you know, that's yeah. Why 220 games, he was so incredibly successful. Longevity and dedication.
Vizzy Hard Seltzer, flavors for every vibe. Celebrate responsibly. Molson Coors Beverage Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. All right, you're not on Twitter or any of the social platforms, but you get stuff sent to you. I know you do. Yep. You come up with stuff I don't even see. But there's a guy named Warren Sharp. He does a lot of fantasy football analysis. Very deep dive, very technical, very numerical, but he does a strength of schedule forecast every year in his own way, however he does it. And I thought it was interesting as it pertains to the Bears. So last year against playoff teams, and this is probably a predictable situation, they were 1-6 against what amounted to playoff teams a year ago. Non-playoff teams, they were 6-4 against those teams. Teams above 500, 1-7. Teams that, when they faced him, were below 500, or in the end of the story of the season, under 500, 6-3. So the Bears beat teams that were in their area code, so to speak, and did not do well against the really good teams. But now they got a revamped roster that's added some more veteran impact, and will add a franchise quarterback, we can say, and another top 10 pick potentially, and another year with Matt Eberflus. A new offensive scheme, and they, according to Warren Sharp, will have the third easiest schedule in 2024. Do you care about that? Do you put that in the pot and shake it around? I mean, things change because every team's trying to get better, and there's going to be a handful of teams that are going to be significantly better than they were a year ago, and they weren't considered a playoff team a year ago, or maybe not even considered one this year. So this is somewhat of an exercise in futility because you really don't know, but how do you take it?
That's kind of why I'm glad I don't have social media because, you know, listen, what are the most two important three most important games you have to win twice?
Yeah.
And that's Green Bay and Detroit, and they were both playoff teams. And Minnesota, yeah. You don't know what's going to happen to those guys this year. So, you know, if you talk about, oh, yeah, they got the easiest schedule, okay. But if you don't beat teams within your own division, it doesn't matter what type of schedule you think that you have.
Right.
So can you beat Detroit twice, which you should have last year, and can you beat Green Bay at least once this year? So that's where – you know, my concern and my interest is in the strength of scheduling because, and I'm glad, I love the fact that Montez Sweat is already put his teammates on notice. Look, man, we got to beat the Green Bay Packers or else. So I appreciate that so much by Montez. And when I do get to talk to him, I'm going to thank him for
yes.
that because it's something that needed to be said
yes.
beforehand.
It needs to dominate the locker room
yes.
for Packer weeks. So the Bears are playing last year's playoff teams this year, the Rams, the 49ers, Houston, Green Bay, and Detroit twice. So that's seven games against last year's playoff teams. But I went looked also. They got nine games, unless I got the math wrong. Nine games, Tommy, against teams with a starting quarterback with 2 years or less in starting experience. Do you look at that at all as anything to hang your hat on with a defense that finished the year extremely strong and has a lot of momentum moving into 2024?
I don't minimize it down to one position. I look at it, the overall accomplishment of the football team and where they're headed, you know? So you can look at, you know, the Houston Texans with C.J. Stroud. Okay, he's going to be in his second year at the quarterback position, but he also, as a rookie, led his team into the playoffs.
Right.
Jordan Love is a second-year starter, and he had a season that was a pretty darn good season. Jared Goff, I think he's closer to being sacked than he is to escaping the pocket and throwing – a lot of completion. So I don't know. To minimize it down to one position, I think it's unfair for the rest of the guys on the team.
And we're talking about Carolina. We'll face them with Bryce Young. We'll face a Washington team with a new quarterback. Presumably we'll pick in the top three and stay right there. And New England also will have a new quarterback, a young quarterback.
Minnesota
will have a young quarterback. And maybe it'll be J.J. McCarthy. Who knows? All right, lastly, talk about Caleb Williams. Dane Brugler, who does a great job for The Athletic in his Beast report. I think it's 800 pages long. I threw this nugget at you the other day. A very impressive stat about Caleb Williams. 199 pass attempts on third and fourth down, did not throw an interception. That's significant.
Amazing.
That is significant.
You know, listen, every offensive coordinator, every offensive quarterback coach, everybody talks about protecting the football. And, I mean, that's the ultimate in protecting the football, my gosh. And to have that type of knowledge and discipline and everything that goes along with protecting the football on third and fourth down, my gosh, that's one of the most impressive stats that I've heard from a college quarterback in a long, long time.
Tastes like Miller time. Go to MillerLite.com/BearsPod to find delivery options near you. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. That's going to wrap us up today. Tommy, nice job. You pulled it out again, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to it. Listen, I'm looking forward towards a draft because we've talked about it with such frequency and such role of importance that it's going to have in the future of the Bears. I look forward to when that number one pick is given to Roger Goodell, then they get down to the rest of the draft and see where Ryan Poles and his staff, kind of figures out the route they're going
to
take.
Yep, and get down to business. Next week, we'll have our podcast with some comments about Ryan Poles in the tune-up before the draft. Every NFL GM has to speak on it before the draft, so he'll give us a little nugget or two, I'm sure. We got the annual award at Halas Hall that leads up to the draft. It is truly a Bears tradition, and that's the Brian Piccolo Awards. A veteran and a rookie from last year will get those honors, and so that's the cycle. Like Matt Eberflus always talks about, the cycle of the snap, Tom. This is the cycle of the season. Like, you get into this rhythm of what to expect, different mileposts, and then leading into May when you've got mini camps and the start of OTA. So very excited about it all. For Tom, and also thanks to Bucky Brooks from NFL Network. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe now on the Chicago Bears official app, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Bear down, everybody.